ready for Bears and Packers taking place later today, 3:25 up at Lambeau. We've got coverage for you all day. After we're off the air at 11 o'clock, it is Bleck and Abdallah's pregame tailgates from 11 to 1. Then the network pregame with Waddle, Sylvie, and Dion Miller kicks in at 1 o'clock, leading you into kickoff. Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer have the call of the game with Jason McKee on the sidelines at 3:25. Then after the game, we're wall-to-wall, getting you all wrapped up from this Bears-Packers game. It will be the post-game show on the network with Yurko and Peggy, and then post-post-game show with Jeff Meller, Jason McKee, and Pat the Designer. So wall-to-wall Bears and Packers coverage for you today. Tyler and Shea in with you till 11 a.m. Talking Bears with you, and I do want to dive into the pass game this week because I don't know how much Caleb Williams is going to be asked to do today. I really don't. I think it's up in the air. You look at the weather conditions of today. We've had snow. We've seen the shots of Lambeau Field from all of the NFL Network and the ESPN shows today. There's a lot of snow on the ground. The locals will be asked to bring their shovels in exchange for tickets today. But I look at what Caleb Williams has done so far this season. It hasn't been good enough. I will also say this. It hasn't been bad enough either. He hasn't turned the ball over. He's been pretty good in these fourth quarters of making sure you have a chance to win football games. And I think part of it is the body of work that he puts together through quarters one through three. I also think that there's a word that people don't like to use with quarterbacks, especially their own quarterbacks, that I think he's lived to a T and I don't think should be frowned upon as much as it is. I feel like it's been treated as a football slur, but he is a game manager.
Yep.
And I think that with what this team is right now, that's a good thing. He hasn't lost them a single game this year. He hasn't. Now, would you have liked to see him contribute a little bit more to winning when he is the number one overall pick from a season ago and he's got the infrastructure around him, he's got the weapons, he's got the offensive line, he's got the running game? Yeah, I would like to see a little bit more. I just don't think today's the day where it's going to happen for him.
But what I would say about Caleb, too, is like he has the it factor. You know what I mean?
Seen in the fourth quarter, yep.
So you ask, would you like to see him contribute a little bit more to winning? It's winning in a blowout versus winning at the end. But I know that if the game is managed well enough that I'm in a one-score situation entering the fourth quarter, I feel pretty damn good with who I have under center.
And maybe it's the I'd like to see my blood pressure be a little bit lower as we enter the fourth quarter type of game. Like
the game against the Giants, it probably now, and I will say, the game against the Giants, Caleb is the reason the Bears won that game. But you would like it to be more convincing against a two-win team.
Well, that was a legitimate like comeback win. Everything. It had all the ingredients for a big-time comeback win. Even that Bengals game, too, where he makes the play to Colston Loveland, and he just rips that ball across the seam, and then Colston does the rest. Those are games where I'm like, all right, Caleb really contributed to the win, specifically in the fourth quarter. But what about the Viking game? What about even the Steeler game? And I would even throw in the Eagle game as well. And he did make the play in the Eagles game. The throw to Cole Kmet was sort of a put-away shot for the Bears. But it's felt like in all of these games, there have been moments, I'd throw the Saints game in there as well, where you could have put these teams away a little bit earlier and not made it a one-possession game and not had to stress through a fourth quarter. And the nature of the NFL generally is that fourth quarters are going to be close games. You're going to have to either come back from down 3-7 or preserve a 3-7 point lead. It's just the nature of what the NFL is. This isn't college where you're looking at 49-7 on the scoreboard when you go into the fourth quarter necessarily. Right. So there is that element to it, but there's also the factor of there have been key plays on third down where it's like see receiver, throw to receiver, and he's been off target on it. And those are the things that need to be completed. I'm not even saying some of these drives have to end in points. They just have to be sustained for an extra 90 to 2 minutes and take that time off the clock so that the opposition doesn't have that time to go out and score.
Yeah, it's what I was saying earlier, too, about like I think the body of work will show that Caleb had a pretty good season. The completion percentage is going to be ugly. And
it's going to be worse than it was last year.
It only got worse against Philadelphia, which I get was really difficult conditions, high winds. It wasn't a great opportunity to throw the ball in the air.
I would say he played smarter in that game because, remember, throwaways are incompletions. And I think there were moments, and there have been moments really all season long where he's done a better job of getting rid of the football.
Yep.
And that's going to be reflected in the completion percentage, but it's one of those where your completion percentage goes down, but I think your coach's happiness with how you're playing elevates.
Yeah, I think it's why Ben Johnson even mentioned, like, people who are bashing Caleb, they shouldn't be. Because, look, I'd rather have an incomplete pass than a sack. And I think you've seen the sack numbers drop so much, and the sack avoidance has become such an elite trait that I can explain, like, if I can go to the why is the completion percentage so bad? Part of it is you lead the league in drops. Mm-hmm. But it's not like we're at a point anymore where that would get you from the 58% up to like 70%.
No. Even 65.
You'd be 58% to like 62%. And 62% still isn't where we want to be living.
And 62% is assuming all of your drops are completions.
But if the other part of the why is he's getting rid of the football when he's pressured and throwing it away and it's not being intercepted and it's not resulting in a drive-killing sack, I can live with some of those incompletions. So, look, like Patrick Mahomes has never had a 70% completion percentage. If Caleb is just going to be a guy who can complete low percentage throws but isn't going to be overly accurate, that might just be what we have here. You will trade incompletions that aren't interceptions or aren't sacks for the occasional big play.
I think the other part, too, is if he plays his style, and by his style, I mean a blend of like what Ben Johnson wants him to be and also who he innately is as a quarterback. If he plays in that style and is completing 64, even 65% of his passes, you're going to be looking at an MVP candidate because you'll see it reflected in his numbers. They will get pretty gaudy at that point if he's just completing a couple hairs more of his completions that he should be having. So I'm intrigued to see what it looks like today. Another thing, too, I wouldn't be surprised if he uses his legs a little bit more today in some of these situations.
Either.
If they try to get him into some play-action boots, because he has been an effective runner this year. He picks his spots, and I think Ben Johnson also picks Caleb's spots, too, of when he wants to deploy him as a runner. But it's something that I always thought was a very underrated trait of his coming out of college. He was running for double-digit touchdowns in college at USC. I get it's a different game there, but I do think that utilizing his legs, especially out of a game in Philly where you ran the ball as effectively and as powerfully with your running backs, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to see him use his legs in this game against Green Bay, where you know they may be selling out to stop Swift and Manungai. All right, right. Here comes Caleb out the back door and picks up 15.
Could this be a spot where, like, I'll use the Bills as the example, Josh Allen being a running quarterback, but Joe Brady has made it like, we don't want you to run until we're playing the Chiefs or in a game where we need it.
Yeah,
and
the playoffs.
You've got to go superhero mode. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where we're going to unleash you. Could this be a spot for Caleb where Ben Johnson's like, look, we're going against a top 10 rush defense. And I know they don't have Devontae Wyatt, but they have plugged the rush all year. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they lost Devontae Wyatt on Thanksgiving. It's not like after he left the game, Jahmyr Gibbs was suddenly gashing them. They still plugged up the run pretty well.
Yeah.
So could this be a game where you just go, we don't have Roma Dunze. We might not be able to rely as much on running the football as we did in previous weeks. Caleb, we need you to be a superhero today. We're going to let you run.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me, and I don't think it's the worst plan of action. I will say Josh Allen, his physique and his body.
It's a little different. Yeah.
A little more suited to withstand some of the hits, especially there in the conditions that we're going to be seeing today up at Lambeau. But hey, slide, get out of bounds. And listen, Green Bay may take a hit at you. All right. They may be doing everything in their power to try to make Caleb feel like it's 15 degrees outside today. But that's where you got to be smart. And that's where you got to see if there is a late shot. Linemen get in there and make something happen, mix it up a little.
Don't be Jackson Dart.
That's the other part.
Don't be Jackson Dart and take extra hits. Don't be Jaden Daniels and run yourself into contact. Like, this is a day to get out of bounds. This is a day to give yourself up. The hits are going to feel a little extra rough today.
Yeah. On the Roma Dunze front, so he's going to miss the game. He's been dealing with a foot injury. And this seems like it's different from the heel that was bothering him from earlier in the season. The heel injury, it seemed like was more of like a plantar fasciitis type of issue from earlier in the year. And now you've got the foot, what are they calling it? Like a foot fracture. It's not like a broken foot, but it's kind of like the equivalent of like shin splints.
Stress fracture, wasn't it?
Yes. So it's something that a lot of doctors and a lot of people have said, like, it's looking like it's a week to week type of thing for Roma Dunze, but you know, it's really got to be bothering him if he's missing the Packer game.
Yeah.
And it may be one of those things. Hopefully you have him back for the Packer game in 2 weeks when you're on your home field. Roma Dunze, I think it's going to be a loss that's going to be felt today, but maybe not as significantly as what it would have felt like losing your wide receiver one in years past because the stable's so deep. When you've got DJ Moore, who now can step up into maybe a role that he's more suited for, Luther Burden, I think a lot of Bears fans have been waiting to see more run out of Luther Burden this season. And then Colston Loveland, his emergence too. I mean, he has quickly become one of my favorite Bears to watch on this team.
Yeah, a lot of people in the first few weeks of the season were questioning, why did we waste a pick on Colston Loveland at tight end? And it was never an issue with the player for me. It was an issue with get him involved more, because I've always believed he's elite as a tight end. In the last few weeks, you've seen it. So today, without Roma Dunze, let's get Loveland involved early and often. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind if he's the leading target getter today.
Yeah, I would say the same thing about Luther Burden, too, because Luther Burden is a guy who's got impeccable run-after-the-catch ability. And if he can do that in these conditions, because, again, I don't think we're going to have snow falling during the game, but that field's probably going to have an element of slickness to it. And when you're reacting first as the receiver and you're the defender and you're reacting second in those conditions, it's tough. And for guys that can make people miss, like DJ is a more I'm going to run through you type of guy. I'm going to bounce off of you to get my extra yards. Burden's the type of guy who's just going to juke you in space.
Yep.
He's going to use his quickness, his quick cutting, and he's going to find ways to make guys miss.
And that's where I think Loveland can be super valuable, because he's not a traditional inline tight end.
No.
He's a big wide receiver.
Yeah.
He's closer to Brock Bowers than he is to George Kittle.
Yeah.
Where I could argue Loveland is the best route runner on the team. Like, that's an exceptional ability to have at his size and strength. If I can split him out or put him in the slot today with a defense reacting second, it could be a huge day to use Colston Loveland.
Yeah, and you put him on a linebacker who is playing on that surface. And, all right, Quay Walker, welcome back. He's fresh off of IR, and he gets Colston Loveland, and that's the type of player that you have to go up against. Or you put him on a defensive back who's just going to be, I mean, we've seen, how many times have we seen now in the last, like, 4 weeks? You see the matchup of Colston Loveland in the slot. We're going to take you on the inside, and it's just, you've got a smaller defensive back on the guy, and he just plays basketball with them.
Yeah, it's a size and weight mismatch with a guy who's an elite route runner. It's so incredibly difficult to guard, and it's even more difficult when there might be snow on the field, when it's this cold, and you have to react to a guy who already knows what he's doing. I think this is a huge day for Loveland.
Yep. 312-332-3776 if you want to talk Bears with us. Bears and Packers coming up at 325. How you feeling, Bears fans? It's felt like one of the more gettable Packer games in recent memory, and it's the highest stakes one that we've seen in at least a decade, in my opinion. 312-332-3776. More of your Bears calls when we come back on Tyler and Shea.
This is Tyler and Shea.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
You can catch our video stream this week on YouTube and Twitch. It's all brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. During Chevy Red Tag, get 0% APR financing on a 26 Chevy Silverado 1500 pickup. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy Silverado, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. Bears and Packers today. It's everything we could have dreamed what this matchup would be heading into the season. And it's really probably surpassed a lot of our expectations. 9-3, I don't think, was a record that anybody had on their bingo card, even the most optimistic of Bears fans heading into the season. And now you get 9-3 going into Packer Week against the 8-3-1 Packers, you are currently residing over the top spot in not just the NFC North, but in the entire conference. This is what you would have thought maybe the Bears could look like in 2026 or 2027. But to get in 2025 is a gift. And now you just got to ride that momentum. People talk about the one-score games and the turnovers, how sustainable is all of that stuff. But where you're at right now, I mean, this is what makes it the marquee matchup it is. This is why the game got flexed to 325. This is why the Fox number one crew's in the building today, because you did the work through the first 12 games, and now the final five are going to determine really how people view you heading into the playoffs, assuming you get there.
You have an opportunity to seal up the one seed in the final 5 weeks of the season. If you do that, then you just nobody will doubt that this is a Super Bowl contending team. Whether or not they pull that off, who knows?
Today's a mega step for that, too.
But yeah, today, like, you go win today, then the conversation tomorrow nationally will be the Bears are a championship team.
Yeah. I think you win today, and it's almost like the expectation becomes that you win the North. Right? Because the expectation then becomes you're going to beat your remaining two divisional opponents on your home turf.
Yeah.
When you face the Packers in 2 weeks and when you close the season out against the Lions.
Frankly, like you win today, you will make it so that you can lose to the Packers at home and still win the NFC North.
For sure. For sure. Kevin's in Lincolnwood. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on the show. I am on my way to enemy territory.
Love it.
Here on the blue and orange today, so I'm super excited. If you just look at what I was thinking about in the earlier part of the show, and you guys were talking about like some of the differences between last year and this year. Obviously, you know, we're winning the one-score games. There's a big difference in how the team kind of carries itself. I think it all just points to one guy, and I think you know where I'm going with this. He's brought the energy. He's brought the accountability more than anything. And I think the Bears may have finally gotten the head coaching call right.
Yeah, it's certainly trending that way, Kevin. And that's what's so important, too, right? Even thinking about the Vikings, too, when they had that dream regular season, not in 2024, but rather in 2022, they brought in Kevin O'Connell. That was the first year under O'Connell. Yep. And he went out, won 13 games. They won the North. Sure, did it feel flimsy with all the one-score wins and stuff like that? But one-score wins, while some of it's luck, I do think there is a mentality to it.
100%.
We feel good about our team in the fourth quarter, and we feel built to beat teams in the fourth quarter. And I feel like that's the type of team Ben Johnson is trying to build with the toughness where we're going to beat the hell out of you for three quarters, and if you've got anything left in the tank in the fourth quarter, I guarantee you we're better equipped to beat you at that game.
Yeah, I think, too, like the Kevin O'Connell Vikings team 2022 that won a bunch of one-score games and got to the playoffs, it felt like it was duct tapes and glue holding everything together a little bit. It never felt real or sustainable long-term. I'd also argue the 2018 Bears kind of in the same vein, mm-hmm. where you were winning all these games and it just kept happening. And people expected maybe the floor to fall out of it at some point, and it never did. But it happened in a way that you weren't sitting there going, we're going to be really good for a really long time, because there was no offensive sustainability. It was a lot of trick plays, manufacturing yards, manufacturing scores, and choking teams out, winning games, scoring 15 points. Mm-hmm. This is a little different, where you have a head coach who came in who is your play caller and has built one of the five best offenses in football just mm-hmm. by scoring.
Yeah.
That's where I look at it and I go, I don't have to feel like you're going to just win a Super Bowl in 2025. I think in 2026 and 2027, you're going to be one of the favorites. That's where I feel like they got the coach right. Everything he's done feels like it's for the long term.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like this is fool's gold or smoke and mirrors stuff. This is legit. This is real football. He built a great offensive line. He knows how to scheme everything, and he's got this team winning football games in a way that reminds me of what this same coach did with the Lions 3 years ago mm-hmm. when they legitimized themselves and became good. And then you looked at it and said, like, they went 15-2 the year after. And I know it ended badly in the playoffs, but they were a Super Bowl favorite all season. I think that's what's about to happen to the Bears in 26 and 27.
I will say this. I would not isolate credit to Ben Johnson either. And this guy's been much maligned over the past offseason. But I think Ryan Poles deserves some credit for what 100%. He's built to. Because this thing is not moving the way it is without the offensive line overhaul. And while, yes, Ben Johnson certainly has his fingerprint on some of these decisions and these picks and these trades that are made, Ryan Poles did draft Darnell Wright, who's looking like he could be an all-pro tackle. At a minimum, a Pro Bowl caliber tackle this year. He did go out, and I would probably say I would give him a little bit more credit for the Tooney trade, whereas I would give Ben Johnson a little more credit for the Jonah Jackson trade.
Sure.
But it all works together here, and you've got yourself a badass offensive line that's moving people and just dominating in the run game right now.
Yeah, and again, that's where this feels ready to go long term. And I'm good with giving Poles credit. Obviously, I've been a guy who's slandered Poles when he's deserved it. Right now, he deserves praise. Because honestly, you look at the draft, and I know like some of it's been a little underwhelming. Shamar Turner, you can't help the injury. Mm-hmm. But Ozzie Tripillo has stepped in, played really well at left tackle. That's a win for Poles in the draft board. Mm-hmm. Colston Loveland, over the past 2 months, has been one of the five best tight ends in football. That's a win for Ryan Poles on the draft board. Mm-hmm. Like, he did well this offseason, and he deserves credit for it. But I'm not ready to put him on a pedestal until I see. The one thing that's critical for me, there has to be a philosophical adjustment. They have never, under Ryan Poles, ever invested any meaningful capital into the defensive line, be it edge rusher or defensive tackle. This is the offseason. It has to happen.
Yeah. And listen, we'll attack that problem when we get to the offseason. It seems like they did their due diligence to try to land a pass rusher at the trade deadline, but it seemed like they were going more big game hunting than the intrigue of a Jalen Phillips, who has become a very, very vital piece of what Philadelphia has been defensively since the trade deadline. I know it didn't look great last week, but like Jalen Phillips has certainly made an impact. So Mike is also on the way to Lambeau. What's going on, Mike?
How are you, fellas?
What's good, happening? Man. What's up?
I wanted to ask a quick question. It's my first time calling in, longtime listener, but with Rome being out and everyone talking about how great BJ is, how do you feel about Luther Burden having a big game today?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. I think he could be primed for a big game. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be all through the passing game, though, because that's the beauty of Luther Burden is you can use him in a lot of different ways. You can get him involved in the run game as well. I think Luther's a dynamic player. I'd like to see him utilized in a number of ways today, and I think Ben Johnson's got the creativity, especially after on the heels of your team going out and rushing for 280 yards, largely with just the running backs. Why don't we get Luther involved? See what he can do in the run game a little bit today, too.
Jet sweep day today at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, that or maybe the screen game, too.
Sure.
Like, all of that could play into today. By the way, I love that people are driving up to Lambeau, listening to us right now, because that drive up to Lambeau, it's from Chicago. It's a long-ish drive, but it's
about 3 hours.
It's one of those drives where it's like, you know, you're about to go see a sports landmark, like the child in you comes out. Yeah. I've only been one time, and it was 2 years ago. The Bears had a chance to knock out the Packers in the final week of the season. The Bears couldn't play their way into the playoffs. It ended up being Justin Fields' last game as a Chicago Bear, and just the feeling of, all right, we're driving up to Lambeau right now. It just, everything about it felt magical. It was fun. And it felt like you were walking into a big time environment.
I've been twice, and both times I left with my ears ringing. It's just, it's different, man. It's, to me, the best environment in all of sports. And you're right. The drive up there, it's so apprehensive. You're just getting pumped. And then you go to the game, and it's like, it's just, it's incredible. You have to do it once in your life. If you're
sports
a football fan,
list.
It's unbelievable. It's the best sports venue I've been to by quite a margin.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I say this complimentary, and it may not sound complimentary, but it is actually the highest compliment I can give a sports venue and like the surrounding areas. It's collegiate.
Yeah.
And it's everything about it. The entire town's into it. It's the biggest show in town. Everyone's into it. You see people on their lawns tailgating.
Yep.
Everyone's friendly up there. It's just a great time. And if you're a Bears fan, you have to make it up to Lambeau Field at some point for a Bears-Packers game. Because just the rivalry of it, the jabs that are thrown across the way, but it's all out of love, too, with these Packers fans. And now that things are looking like they're going to be meaningful games for the foreseeable future, I'm not just talking about this year, but really for the next 3-4 years, it's looking like you're going to be playing meaningful games against each other. The ticket may be a little pricier, but it's worth it.
It's so worth it.
I mean, what this rivalry brings, when it is good, it is as good as anything. It's the best, and it's just, we haven't had that, really. We haven't had these moments where you get into a December game between these two teams, and the stakes are what we're looking at today, where both teams are jockeying to win the North. And to have that finally again is fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
Love every bit of it.
And it's made extra special, frankly, for me by the weather. I think this is going to be, at some point, Lambeau will be the last of the outdoor stadiums where the weather plays a part and you get cold weather games like this. It's special, man. It's such an incredible place.
Yep. All right. When we come back, a little bit of NFL fact or fiction as we get you ready for the rest of the football day as well. That's coming up next. Tyler and Shay.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Getting you set for Bears and Packers today. Tyler Aki and Shay Norling with you till 11. Then it is the Bleck and Abdallah pregame tailgates from 11 to 1. Leading you into our network pregame coverage of Bears and Packers. Waddle, Sylvie, Deion Miller with you, leading you into kickoff. Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Jason McKee. And then after the game, the network postgame show with Peggy and Yurko, followed by the postgame show with Jeff Meller, Jason McKee, and Pat the Designer. So wall to wall, Bears and Packers for you today. But we're going to get you ready for the rest of the NFL slate. And Shay, we've got a little NFL fact or fiction.
Yes,
sir. What's on the docket here, my friend?
All right, so these are simple, just simple statements.
Okay.
We'll address them as fact or fiction, starting locally.
All right.
The Chicago Bears will win the NFC North. Fact or fiction? Boy, it's easier if I ask you tomorrow morning, isn't it?
It is. For now, I'll say fact.
Wow.
You have the spot. And I think you've got a really good chance to win today. And if you've got a good chance to win today, I think you're probably trending closer to 4-1 the rest of the way than you are to 2-3 or 1-4. So I'll go fact.
Wow. I would still say fiction. And it's not because I think the Bears are bad. It's because the Packers have that pesky-ass tie, which I talked to you a little earlier in the week about. How is it that the Lions beat the Cowboys and the Bears beat the Cowboys, but the Packers tying the Cowboys is what gives them an advantage in the standings when you get down to the end of the season?
It could also be a disadvantage, too.
It could be, but it's easier that it works as an advantage if they take care of their business than that it doesn't. Fact or fiction? The New England Patriots will win the AFC and advance to the Super Bowl.
I'm going to go fiction there. You know how I feel about Houston, and you, I know, feel the same way. And then I want to see what it looks like again against the Bills. And you could be looking at, you're playing the Bills twice in the span of a month with New England and Buffalo. And I think that this Bills team is just built for December. I don't know what if the Patriots are built for December and January type of football, but I know the Bills can be. So I'm in wait and see mode with that. I don't think any of the, and then obviously like Denver's flimsy too.
Yep.
I feel better about New England than I feel about Denver. And then I feel about if Indy or Jacksonville gets in. But the one team that I think is going to cause a lot of problems for teams in December is, in December and January, is Houston. So yeah. I'm going to go fiction.
I would also say fiction. I think the Bills and the Texans should be the favorites to win the AFC. And the Texans, you're being really bullish if you take it now. Mm-hmm. But I just, that defense is going to make it look like a much more acceptable pick in a few weeks. I do think they're going to make the playoffs. And look, the Patriots side of things, they're great. Drake May might win MVP. It's just history's not on your side. You go into January with a young quarterback.
I will say this, though. Of all the young quarterback-led teams who are probably feeling to a degree of how the hell did we get here right now between Chicago, New England, and Denver, I would probably feel best about New England.
Part of that, too, is I think the AFC is going to be an easier slate to get through than the NFC. Mm-hmm. The NFC's a bear.
But the other part of it, too, is, I mean, Denver probably has the best defense of the three, of those three, and maybe has, I mean, they have a top three defense in all of football, yeah, too. So that can always guide you along in the playoffs and at least get you to a conference championship or even a Super Bowl.
Fact or fiction. Myles Garrett's 2025 season will be remembered as the greatest pass rushing season in NFL history.
That's a fact, because he is going to break the pass or the sack record, whether it's this week, next week. He's got ample opportunity to do so as long as he stays healthy. And the best part to me about him potentially breaking the record, he's four away. I don't think we're going to be looking at this as a situation where, oh, these guys played 17 games. No, I don't think that's going to be the case at all. I think he's going to get this record probably in like the 15th game.
He could break it today. They play Tennessee. Yep. Cam Ward takes a ton of sacks, and it's only their 13th game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He could break the sack record today. Then I will just add, for all the people who are like, oh, Mason Graham, what's he done? It isn't a coincidence that Myles Garrett is having the greatest pass rushing season ever in the same year that they put Mason Graham on their defensive line.
Those two
work so well in tandem. And you add in the context, it's a two-win team that is or three-win team that is trailing in almost all of their games, which ostensibly means there are fewer pass opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And he might break the sack record in week 13 of their games.
Yeah, it's obviously not leading to wins, but you're talking about a guy who may hit the trade market this offseason too. And you'd be talking about one of the most coveted pass rushers, despite the fact that he's in his 30s.
Fact or fiction? The Carolina Panthers will win the NFC South.
That is a fact.
Wow.
That is a fact, because I think we're seeing a little bit of, and it's just a speed run of a season here, two teams, ships crossing in the night, because Tampa Bay started off so hot out of the gate, and Carolina struggled. Carolina, we've talked a lot about all week about the Bears have hit their win total over. Carolina also hit their win total over after beating the Rams last week. And I think that's a pivotal one to get you over the top, especially when you still have two to go against Tampa Bay. So the fate is in your hands if you want to go out and win the division on both sides. Both teams control their own destiny the rest of the way in terms of making the playoffs and getting in as the NFC South champion.
They play each other twice.
But I feel like this Carolina team, the momentum that they're riding here down the stretch, you're seeing much better play out of Bryce Young.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got the better play caller in Dave Canales and what he's doing to mold a younger QB and also just fit all the pieces together offensively. The running backs that they've cycled through throughout the season. I like Carolina, and I think they win the NFC South.
By the way, the interesting part of it with Carolina and Tampa playing each other twice down the stretch, who built Baker Mayfield?
Dave Canales.
Uh-oh.
That is true.
I kind of wonder, man. I think Tampa has fallen so much. They're so banged up. And Carolina just won't go away. They've made themselves such a pain in the ass to play with their running game and their defense. They're really physical. I kind of think Carolina's going to pull
it off. It's crazy because last week showed me, Carolina had already shown me this year, you can lose any game. Case in point, losing to New Orleans outright.
Yep.
But then last week they show you that they can win any game too.
Yep.
With what they did when they went out and they popped the Rams. So they probably needed the elements to assist them in some of that. But when you're turning over Matthew Stafford the way that they did a week ago, you can certainly do that to Baker Mayfield.
Fact or fiction, the NFL playoffs will feature none of Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and Joe Burrow.
I'm going to go fiction.
Who gets in?
I think one of Lamar or Mahomes gets in. One of them. Tonight's a big game for Kansas City.
Yep.
I mean, as jacked up as we are about Bears and Packers, you're getting the equivalent in the AFC. Maybe, obviously, without the historical stuff to it and the rivalry aspect to it. But in terms of the magnitude of the game, you're getting the same thing in the AFC tonight on Sunday Night Football between the Texans as well as the Chiefs. So
what's interesting, though, is it isn't an elimination game for the Texans. The Texans will control their own fate in their division. They can still win it. Even if they lose tonight, they can still win their division. Beating the Colts helped them a ton. But if the Texans win tonight, stick a fork in Kansas City. They'll be dead.
Effectively. And listen, Burrow's not dead either. The Bengals...
And I'll tell you, losing to Buffalo today wouldn't kill them either. 8-9 might be enough to get this thing done in that division.
It wouldn't kill them.
It makes it really difficult.
But just know, like, Ravens-Steelers is taking place today. One of those teams is getting to 7 wins today. So then you fall 3 games back in that department. You do still have a couple divisional games left. You still have your game against the Ravens. The schedule's not difficult for Cincinnati by any stretch. You can win any of these games, including today against Buffalo. I think you've got a chance to win. They've certainly shown that they can win as touchdown underdogs, as evidenced by what they did on Thanksgiving, where they didn't just beat Baltimore. They clapped them like a drum. It was belt to ass for 60 minutes there. So I'm going to go with fiction, because I think one of them finds their way in. If I had to order the likelihood of them, I would probably go Mahomes, Lamar, Burrow.
Fair. Fact or fiction, the Indianapolis Colts will miss the playoffs entirely. If you want the table set for it, 1, their quarterback has a broken effing leg. Mm-hmm. 2, 3 of their final 5 games are against divisional opponents. 2 of them against Jacksonville starting today, and 1 more against Houston with a loss to Houston already in hand.
I'm going to say they still make the playoffs. I think you're going to see, ultimately, the Chargers fall out. And they'll be subbed in by the Houston Texans. You've got 3 teams right now that are all 8-4. And while Indy has been flimsy as of late, I still think they're good enough. And the other part, too, like the schedule and the divisional games... It's not like this division is the NFC West.
No.
Or even the NFC North. It's not. Or the AFC West. That's not what you're dealing with here in the AFC South. You've got 3 teams with good records, but I don't necessarily think... Like, you could even argue that the standings right now read Jacksonville, Indy, Houston. I would argue that the inverse is how I would power rank them. Houston, Indy, Jacksonville.
I actually agree with that. The problem for Houston or for Indy is going to be it's not only the divisional games, it's the 2 games outside of the division. Do you know who they come against? At Seattle and home against San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Jesus.
It's not going to be easy.
Talk about hell coming to breakfast. You get your... Well, first, you Jacksonville on the road today with your quarterback on a broken leg. 4 first place in the division. And then you get a sandwich spot of Seattle and San Francisco before you get the 2 most consequential games of your season, with the last one coming on the road to a team you already lost.
And the San Francisco game, it's not even like you've got the West Coast coming east for a little breakfast football. It's Monday night.
Yeah, it's a brutal slate for the Colts to close this out.
I'd have to look at it with some of the other schedules, too. But I just think that the Chargers are too damn beat up at this point. So
fair. One more?
One more.
Fact or fiction? Jaxon Smith-Njigba will win Offensive Player of the Year and cement himself as the best receiver in football.
Okay, I think first part fact, second part fiction. Because I think he will win Offensive Player of the Year. He's putting up, I mean, he could break the receiving record this year.
He's
putting
up 1,400 yards basically right now.
Incredible numbers so far this season. But I don't think it necessarily cements him as the best receiver in football. I think... He certainly works his way into that tier of guys like Jefferson and Chase with the season that he's putting together this year. But I still would take those 2 guys over JSN right now.
Where does Puka fit in?
I think he's in that next rung. Like Puka is obviously damn good. A damn good receiver. But I think he's in that next rung. And I don't think it's like quarterbacks either, where we look at that top tier of quarterbacks and we say... That next year, there's a significant drop-off. Like, you're talking about very different names at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as much the same as receivers. I think we've actually gotten to a point where I used to feel that way about receivers, but the gap between Tier A and Tier B in terms of receivers has shrunk because of guys like Puka and even to a degree like with JSN too.
Sure.
All right. That is fact or fiction around the NFL. When we come back, I got to tell you the story about my roommate.
Oh,
we have to move out from each other. We have to separate.
Oh,
we've had enough.
It's a breakup.
We'll discuss coming up next.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
We'll get back to Bears in just a moment here. Tyler and Shay with you until 11 a.m. Then we hand it over to Bleck and Abdallah, who get things rolling with the pregame tailgate show. That'll lead you into the network coverage of the pregame show with Waddle, Sylvie, and Dion, right into Bears and Packers, and then all of your postgame festivities as well after the game. You can listen to the game here, don't forget, on ESPN Chicago, as well as the ESPN Chicago app. Just find that Bears Game Day tab of the ESPN Chicago app. Turn the sound down on the TV. Turn the sound up with Jeff and Tom. All right. So this happened Thursday night. Thursday night football going on. Cowboys, Lions. At this point, it was the fourth quarter. Game was kind of out of hand at this point. There was a moment late in the game, if you'll remember. DJ Reed came away with an interception. And if you remember what the play looked like, he caught the ball and then was going down to the turf, and the ball's starting to move a little bit. It may or may not have been a catch. And I'm sitting on the couch with my roommate, and you know how all of the networks now, they have their rules analysts, right? Simultaneously, while they're showing the replay of the ball moving and stuff like that on the interception, we're both watching the game, and we at the same time go, Terry?
Oh, no.
Calling for the rules official. Like we were Al Michaels.
Wavelengths.
Trying to get a call in for what was the, was it a catch? Was it not a catch? Was it an interception? And it was that moment we looked at each other like, did you just say Terry too? And it was not the stepbrothers, did we just become best friends moment. It was the, dude, this is enough, we got to move out.
I don't know if this is an issue if you're around each other too much or if it's just like you both watch football so much that
we
this has become second nature.
Dude, the other day, last Sunday too, we had a moment where we're watching, it was the Charger game, and I think, what, did Kamani Vidal get hurt at some point during the game? And he was, my roommate just clocked, he's like, oh my God, That's Jared Patterson. And I go, oh, the Buffalo running back? Not Bills. No, University of Buffalo. And it was another sicko moment where we're this can't go on any longer.
Is that Jared Verse, the UAlbany D end?
It was one of those moments where it's like, what are we doing here?
I mean, how many times has that happened with us, though? Like, you and I in a group chat will send the same text at the same time.
That's fair.
On certain occasions.
But it's another thing when you live under the same roof and you have the same sicko football thoughts. At the same time, like, he went to his rec basketball game the other day, and this must have been like a week or two ago, and it was when the Cowboys were on Monday Night Football, and one of his teammates was watching the game on his phone, and Cowboys number 19 caught the ball, and the guy's like, who the hell is this? And my roommate goes, oh, Ryan Flournoy from Homewood Flossmore? And that was something that we had talked about like a couple weeks before. And it was just like, we're in a very sad football roommate existence right now.
It is. It's like if you live with a sports sicko, because the sports sicko is the only person who will feel this way about certain things.
Yeah.
Like only the sports sicko is sitting at home on the couch and even knowing, oh, it's the prime broadcast. Where's Terry McCauley? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it's only the sicko that feels that way. So you just happen to live with somebody who's as brain rotted by sports as you are.
Mm-hmm. And I've probably caused some of that too, because he's watched probably more Eastern Tennessee State basketball than he would have liked. But it's just what it is at this point.
HBCU go stays on at the Aki household.
On the quad box. Yep. All right. When we come back, I've got a question for all of Bears fans. If you win today against the Packers, are you officially opening the championship window? If you win today against Green Bay on the road to get to 10-3, and take a significant lead in the division. Is the championship window officially open? 312-332-3776. Want to hear from you in 2 minutes.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.